everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. My name is Dan Mott, and back with us this week is executive editor for Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, along with Bob Laguerre and Eric Edholm. Hub, how are you doing?
Doing good. You know, it's hard to believe we've already got a week of Bears camp under our belts, but it's been interesting down there. It certainly appears to be productive. A lot of guys settling into new routines. And, of course, now, as we record on Wednesday, another 22 NFL teams in camp today and tomorrow, along with the Bears and the Ravens. By the end of the weekend, all 32 will be summer camping, if you will. So there's no question that somewhere this season just kind of jumped up and bit us.
How about you, Eric? How's things going, man?
Good. Yeah, my Bears exposure has been limited to one day down in Bourbonnais, but I've been grinding away in the other 31 teams as well, and just excited that, as Hub said, we're almost into this thing. We're pretty close.
How about you, Bob?
Loving camp so far. No really hot weather. Rain the first 3 days, and the best thing about that was that they went right through it, didn't hesitate, practiced in a rain, practiced in a heavy driving rainstorm for a while. Something we never would have seen under Mark Trestman. I don't know that we would have seen it under John Fox. They would have run for cover. Nagy made the intelligent observation that sometimes it helps to practice in the weather that you're going to play games in, and that was great to see.
Well, as these guys said, the Bears reported to training camp last week, and we have quite a bit to look at today. Bob, I'll start with you. What have been some of the biggest takeaways from camp over the past few days along with that rain practice?
Well, we were promised physical practices. As yet, we haven't seen that, which kind of makes sense because you don't want to go all out and be tackling ball carriers to the ground in the first padded practice. They did what Nagy called thudding them up, which is a term Dick Geron, I believe, coined back in the day. They would face up a ball carrier when they came to a tackle situation and give them a shot, but would not take players to the ground yet. We will see some of that when we get back to camp tomorrow and later on in the week. That will be interesting to see. There's not going to be a lot of that, I don't think. No team does a lot of actual full-speed tackling. We will see some of it. It'll be interesting. It will also be interesting to see how the rookies progress. And specifically, I'm looking at Anthony Miller, the wide receiver, and Kylie Fitz, the outside linebacker, who have definitely shown up so far in practice. Anthony Miller, to me, looks like a much better route runner than advertised. He beat Kyle Fuller badly on a couple of plays that I was watching. He seems to show up every practice. Kylie Fitz is a guy who I'm not saying he's going to be a starter for them early on in his rookie season or at any time this year, but he is a guy who looks like he can contribute immediately as a pass rusher.
Oh, that's music to my ears, Bob. A couple of weeks ago, I came on the show and said I love what I saw out of Fitz. He was injured a lot in college, but I mean, seeing him down at the Senior Bowl, I even invoked the name Mark Anderson just as sort of that, you know, he may only be on the field a fixed number of plays, third downs, passing situations, but that type of player. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, and the great thing for Fitz is that Matt Nagy's already noticed them. He noticed them in that he had to tell him to maybe go a little bit easy on the quarterbacks because quarterbacks are no touch at this point and at any point in training camp. But he likes his enthusiasm. He likes that he gets after it. He said, hold off on hitting the quarterback till we get to the preseason. Then you can do it all you want. And it'll be interesting to see if he can do that.
Yeah, Eric just dated us all a bit with Mark Anderson, who, of course, was a double-digit sack guy, pass-rushing specialist on the Bears' last Super Bowl team, came in as a rookie and, as I recall, had I think might have double-digit sacks, but close to it. And that's what Fitz looks like, really. I mean, you can tell he's not a complete NFL linebacker right now. I don't see him taking time away from Sam Acho. But, you know, to be honest, guys, I'm not sure that Aaron Lynch, who was brought in to compete with Acho, was going to take time away from Acho. I think the hope, based on what Lynch did his first year with Fangio in San Francisco when he kind of emerged on the scene, was that he could be a pass rush specialist and add to what appears to be the greatest weakness in that defense. And so that's all they're really looking for from Fitz, if either he or Lynch or both. If he and Lynch can both become a force in the pass rush, then suddenly what seems to be the biggest question about this defense appears to have an answer.
Hub, is there anything else that you saw that stood out to you while you were down in Bourbonnais?
Well, you know, some of the veteran free agents, certainly Ryan Pace has been challenged a bit on some of his free agency signings. There have been some very good ones that people don't talk enough about, like an Akiem Hicks and a Bobby Massey, who's actually turned out pretty well. But this year's group, Allen Robinson appears to be ahead of schedule. He's not doing a ton, but he's doing enough. I thought Taylor Gabriel had an outstanding practice on I lose track of days in Bourbonnais. I guess it would have been Tuesday, but he looks very interesting. I don't know what Bob thinks. Trey Burton has not been as visible as I expected him to be. The Bears are making a concerted effort to develop Adam Shaheen, I think with some positive and some not negative, but not as strong results. And so looking at some of the veterans you're counting on, I think there is so much focus on Mitch Trubisky and everything that he does that we forget to look at some of these other younger players and see how they might be coming along. I would say that I've been a little disappointed in the performance of James Daniels at guard. I don't think that he is an NFL guard right now. I don't know that he has the strength. He certainly needs to learn a lot more about using his hands. He may be a guy who needs a redshirt type season, which you don't really want to see out of a second round pick. But if Anthony Miller, your other second round pick, can be a difference maker, it makes that easier to take. So, you know, a lot of different guys popping up. But I think you have to be very cautious after just 1 week of practices, only what one of them in pads, to really make too much out of what's happened so far.
Yeah, I would agree on Trey Burton. He's definitely been under the radar so far. You rarely notice him, at least I've rarely noticed him. I certainly noticed Shaheen a little bit more. But Gabriel is a guy that flies out at you just because they've thrown the ball deep to him sometimes, and he does have that breakaway speed. He mentioned that Trubisky is starting to earn his trust in that if he throws a 50-50 ball deep down the field, he's confident that Taylor can either outrun or outmaneuver a defensive back and get to that ball. And he certainly looks like nothing away from Tariq Cohen, but Taylor Gabriel might have that extra gear that even Tariq Cohen doesn't have. And I think with Matt Nagy, he's a guy who will find a way to use him effectively. If you remember a couple of years ago, I think he had 8 touchdowns on 38 catches for the Falcons. Not that we're looking at the Falcons' offense here, but he's a guy who could add a lot of excitement to this offense. And Hub also mentioned Aaron Lynch. It's early. Gigantic disappointment so far. Was hurt in the offseason. Has already hurt. If we're to believe the Bears, he suffered a hamstring injury in the first practice, which was essentially a walkthrough. Not a good sign for a guy that you were hoping to get a little bit of pass rush out of this year.
Eric, you had mentioned that you were down in Bourbonnais for a day. Was there any big takeaways that you saw while you were down there?
Yeah, other than, you know, next time remembering my my raincoat when it's forecasting for inches of rain on that particular day, that's probably my biggest takeaway. But one guy who kind of flashed, and again, he might be more of a practice squad candidate, but somebody to sort of keep an eye on, maybe somebody to help kind of push Adam Shaheen a little bit. Colin Thompson made some nice little plays and looked, you know, I know he's sort of regarded as more of a blocker. I think he caught like 3 passes his senior year at Temple, but somebody who looked pretty spry out there. And I thought, at least it's somebody that you have to sort of keep an eye on at this point. But Anthony Miller is one of my favorite prospects from last year's class. I saw nothing that made me change my mind. I'm glad to hear he's been as consistent. And what I saw in OTAs, just to back up the thoughts on Gabriel, I thought he was the fastest player on the field then. And it sounds like he's adding that same type of element now. I'm still fascinated by Kevin White. I can't quit him, guys. I don't know. He's just somebody that, you know, for every drop or catch he can't come down with, he made a couple plays that particular day. So he's still, you know, fighting for that spot in the roster. But it's going to be interesting to see if he can make a run.
Yeah, Eric, I just want to add the perfunctory comment on a guy who's probably not going to make the team, but maybe on the practice squad. You mentioned Colin Thompson. There was a lot of chatter amongst the media on Monday. I guess he somehow ended up in a Monday morning quarterback column or something with Sports Illustrated. And as the guys were talking about it, they were in pads. Thompson caught a ball over the middle, and Josh Woods, a young linebacker, came up on him. And Thompson did something I haven't seen in 5 or 10 years, gave him a forearm shiver and pretty much de-cleated Woods. I mean, and kept running with the ball. So I don't know what his NFL future is, but it was a play that really jumped out, and that's the kind of stuff that you look for in these early practices.
Well, guys, I want to get into some specifics with some of these individual guys and perhaps some of the individual stories that we've seen just within the last few days of camp. And, Bob, I'll start with Tariq Cohen. And you had mentioned about Cohen's versatility. And, I mean, I know it's early on, but have you seen them using Cohen already kind of as a versatile back as we kind of thought he was going to be going into this season?
Well, I hope the Bears aren't going to yank my credential for this, but we did see him throw a couple passes to Mitch Trubisky. I don't know if we're allowed to report that because we're not allowed to report some things that we see, but we did see that. And that's something we know he can do from last year. He will be using the receiver out of the slot, split wide. He'll carry the ball. He'll do a lot of things. And I think what makes this Bears offense different is there are a lot of guys, maybe not quite as versatile as Tariq Cohen, but there are a lot of guys that can do a lot of different things. They know they can do a lot of things with Allen Robinson, line him up at different positions. Ditto Trey Burton. He'll be in the slot. You'll see him in the backfield. You'll see him split wide. You saw him throw a touchdown pass in the Super Bowl. It's not just one guy who's versatile in this offense. It's several guys who are versatile, and that gives them, you know, unbelievable options, different guys on the field, and keeps the defense guessing, which I think is going to be the most interesting aspect of this offense and the biggest difference between this offense and, you know, some of the throwback offenses we've seen in recent years with the Bears.
You know, it's interesting, Bob. I think versatile and versatility may be the two key words of Matt Nagy's new offense. I actually had a column, it depends on what day folks are listening to the podcast, but I think it was Wednesday or Tuesday, in which I talked to Nagy and Allen Robinson about it and trying to get a handle on what this new Bears offense really is and how different it is. And both Nagy and Robinson went out of their way to point out, you know, football is football, and you got guys who play their positions and do the best they can. You can mix and match a lot of different formations and pass routes and this and that, but at the end of the day, they haven't reinvented the wheel here. It's not that this offense is so new and so different. It's that it has so many options in it, and it gives so much versatility, what creates the opportunity for so much versatility for all these players, that's what excites them about it. And Allen Robinson said it specifically, because I asked him, you know, I said there's a perception amongst those of us who've been doing this for a long time that the NFL route tree, the nine routes on the tree, are basically the same for all 32 teams. Has that now been thrown out in what we're calling Matt Nagy's new offense? And initially he said they're different, but then he quickly corrected himself. He said, you know, no, at the end of the day, the routes are what they are. But they're mixed and matched in so many different ways, in so many different formations, and called in so many different ways that it allows for great versatility. And that's one of the reasons that Robinson was excited about coming here as a free agent. And so when you look at the different things Tariq Cohen can do, the different things that Trey Burton can do, the different things that Taylor Gabriel can do, and then you still have a power back like a Jordan Howard and a number one receiver like an Allen Robinson, possibly a solid number two and Anthony Miller. I think that's what is starting to excite people so much about the potential for this offense.
And guys, I wrote about just the offensive design, what Nagy is going to bring from Kansas City. I think it plays right into what you guys are saying. I mean, the Chiefs were in 11 personnel most of the time last year. I mean, that was their 11 was kind of their preferred. They did some 12 as well, meaning three wide receivers, one running back, one tight end. And what they could do is line up in seven or eight different formations. They could put guys in motion. They could have them in the backfield. They could have them out wide in the slot. How does the defense stop that when you have five or six guys who can move in and out and play all those different roles? That's tough. And you can go tempo and keep them in their base defense or keep them in their nickel and run it at them. I mean, that's the versatility. That's where it really plays out, I think.
You know, guys, when you think about it, and regardless of what the formation is, when the Bears get into sets where they're going to put Jordan Howard, Tariq Cohen, Taylor Gabriel, Trey Burton, and Allen Robinson all on the field at the same time, maybe throw in Kevin White too, what are you going to defend? You know, what are you going to call? How are you going to stop them? You're going to try and rush the passer? You're going to try and drop eight? You're going to try and stack the middle or eight in the box to keep them from running the football? You just don't know. And so, again, it comes back to this idea of versatility in having so many guys that can do so many different things. Now, the concern is that can be a little confusing for your own team, and that's why we keep keep hearing about this need to just continue to work on the installation, get everybody familiar with the playbook. It always is a work in progress with a new coach, and this one is going to take a little bit longer than it normally does.
Eric, while we're still on the topic of Bears running backs, we talked over on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, which you can find on iTunes, in our headlines about Todd Gurley's massive extension that he got, and I know that that Jordan Howard is entering his third year of his 4-year contract with an extension like that for Gurley. Do you think that this is going to be perhaps a big year for Jordan Howard in trying to prove himself and perhaps maybe not make Todd Gurley kind of money, but really get a decent offer from the Bears?
Oh, I'm sure his eyes opened. I'm sure any running back who's got a contract coming up in the next year or two is sitting there saying, thank you, LA Rams. Thank you, Les Snead, general manager, for doing this. Not only doing it with the amount of money they did, $45 million in guarantees, but also doing it 2 years ahead of time. We're talking about a guy in Jordan Howard who I think his cap hit is less than $1 million because of where he was drafted and, like you said, where he is in his career. So obviously the Bears are in really nice salary cap shape as it relates to, you know, dead money. They don't have a ton. Running back money, they don't have a ton. Quarterback money with Trubisky's rookie deal, they don't have a ton. So I think they'll have the flexibility to extend him and give him a decent salary. Nothing in that Gurley range. He's just not the player that Todd Gurley is in my mind. But I'm a fan. I like Jordan Howard. If he shows himself up to be that versatile three-down backer, I mean a running back rather, that Matt Nagy says he's going to be, guess what? Then all of a sudden he's made a case for himself to earn more money, whether it's in Chicago or somewhere else. So, yeah, it impacts a lot of guys, I think, that contract.
Bob, I want to take a look at James Daniels for a moment. And I know that Hub and I were talking before we started the show just about Daniels really not looking his best at the guard position within the last couple days. And I know it's not fair to really point out faults of some of these guys. We're not that deep into camp yet to be looking at that. But just in your opinion, how has James Daniels looked at that guard position just within the past couple days?
Well, I thought from the get-go that he was a guy who probably lacked size and strength at the guard position. He's the size that you see some NFL centers, you know, around 300 pounds. The Bears listed him at 295 all offseason. That's not an NFL guard. So clearly, it's probably going to take a year in an NFL weight program for him to be a proficient guard. Now, I think the Bears feel they have the luxury of bringing him along slowly. And Hub mentioned, you don't necessarily want to redshirt a second-round pick. But I believe the Bears feel that they have a pretty decent player in Eric Kush. He's not probably the guy you want starting for 3 or 4 years. He's been a journeyman to this point. He's only started 5 games in his entire career in his previous 5 years. But 4 of those starts came in 2016 for the Bears. And last year, he was set to go into the season as a swing guard, top backup at both positions. I believe it was a hamstring he tore in training camp, wiped out his season. And I specifically asked Nagy about Kush because he's never been a full-time starter and how comfortable they were with him and whether he fit in. And Nagy went, you know, it was far from a vote of confidence and handing him the job, but he said, this guy's up for a challenge. If, you know, he may fail, but he'll come right back and he'll get after it again. And he wants to compete with anyone and everyone. So you're going to get everything you can from him. He has the advantage of having played in Kansas City his first 2 years. And when I say play, he didn't play in a whole lot of games. I think he played in 4 games, but he knows the system. So some of this terminology and some of the blocking schemes are familiar to him, more familiar than anybody else on that offensive line. So, and he does have experience. And, you know, he talked about last year not being a wasted year because he got bigger. He's 317 now. He got stronger. He worked on his technique, which was something he needed. And I think the biggest thing for him was working on plyometrics and flexibility because that's been a problem for him in the past. So he feels like it wasn't a wasted year. He used it the year off to correct some flaws, to tweak some weaknesses, and he's probably a much better player for having missed that year. Whether he's good enough to be a 16-game starter remains to be seen, but it seems that, at least for now, the Bears are fairly comfortable with him at the guard spot going into the regular season. We'll see how it plays out in the preseason, but for right now, I think they have the luxury of bringing James Daniels along a little more slowly than they normally would.
Yeah, Bob, there were a number of us there with Nagy when you asked that question, and I actually did take his response as a vote of confidence, and I haven't really been studying where they're lining up all that much because it's so early in camp, but every time I have looked, Daniels has actually been at right guard and Cush has been at left guard, and we have to remember that while they hope to have Kyle Long 100% at opening day, they're taking it very slow with him, and so he's watching more than he's practicing, and that's why Daniels is getting so much time with the first team. That's also why his shortcomings are sticking out so much, but it appears pretty clear to me that the plan is for Cush to be the starting left guard in the hopes that Kyle Long is ready to go 60 minutes on opening day. He'll be at right guard and that they will take their time with Daniels. At the end of the day, other than these big first and second round tackles who come in at 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", 320, 330 pounds, most offensive linemen coming into the NFL need that redshirt year for nothing else to get into an NFL training program. And even if they're not trying to add bulk, they're trying to add strength and replace some baby fat with some muscle. And I think any attempt to evaluate James Daniels before next year is probably unwise, only because I think he's going to be a different player next year once he's had a full year in the program. Now, guard has different requirements than center, and if you had to line him up at center and move Whitehair out to guard, you can get away with a little less strength because it's more about technique and finesse. It's one of the reasons that a number of us have been surprised that they're playing Daniels at guard, but I think that it's this apparent confidence in Cush that allows them to do that because they do know that Cody Whitehair was much better at center as a rookie than he was when he was moved out to guard last year.
And just a quick note on Daniels too. I mean, he came to Iowa 2015, was a backup, didn't start till the end of that year. I think it was the Rose Bowl that he got his first start as a left guard. Next year he was second team all Big Ten at center, and then it took another step after that. So he's 20 years old until after the week one game. I think he turns 21 like that Monday or Tuesday. So yeah, this is still a very young player and one who saw a huge jump between his first and his second year here in college. May be the same thing with the Chicago Bears.
Hub, we were mentioning Kyle Long, and has there been any differences just within the last couple days?
We talked to him extensively yesterday after practice, and he had a great line. I think it was something to the effect of he tries not to spend too much time in his rearview mirror because something in front of him is going to hit him. And he is doing more. He's doing what they'll allow. Matt Nagy has gone out of his way to point out, and Kyle reaffirmed this yesterday, that they set up a schedule for him before they even got to Bourbonnais. And so the answer is, yeah, we didn't really see him in any team drills prior to getting to camp, and he has been in some team drills on the days that he's been working. I'd be very surprised to see him in a preseason game, certainly short of week four. There's five games this year. I don't even know that they'll bother with that. This is not a guy who needs exhibition game experience. So he is doing more, but they're just not going to let him do much until they get to opening day because of all the time that's been missed the last couple of years.
I think so many Bears fans are just waiting to hear when are they going to sign Roquan Smith to a deal so that he can get to camp and he can begin practicing with this team. Have there been any new updates regarding Roquan Smith?
Yeah, I think Bears fans, angst and nervousness about this only increases with each guy who signs. And I believe Dante Pettis, the second round, remains unsigned. But the only two first-round picks, and again, this could change because Sam Darnold appears close, but right now it's number 3 overall, Sam Darnold, number 8 overall, Roquan Smith. So he could end up being, if not the last NFL draft pick this year to be signed, one of the last 2 or 3. So I tell people to hang tight. I know there's worries about maybe, how much can you depend on Danny Trevathan, who's been banged up, and you got to get Roquan in there. He's got to, get as many reps as possible. I get that, but really, there is no update at this point, and I think Roquan Smith is probably you know, trying to be smart about this and listen to his agents, try to get as good a deal with the offset language as much as possible. But, you know, clearly we understand why fans are getting a little anxious here with this thing. I suspect in a week we're not going to be even worried about this, and certainly not in a year or two. He's going to be a fine player, I think. But right now, I understand why people are getting a little leery about this thing.
Yeah, guys, this is something else that I wrote about early in the week. On the Monday of this week, there were 7 of the top 10 first-round picks still out, and 6 of them all had the same agent, Roquan Smith's agent, Creative Artist Agency. What happened early in the week is dominoes started to fall. Mike McGlinchey, who was with CAA and was the 9th pick, signed on Monday, and then on Wednesday, Josh Allen, who was the 7th pick, signed. So the two guys, one right in front of Smith and one right behind him, have now signed. They're now pretty much locked in to what Smith's going to get one way or the other based on those two decisions. And fans have to remember the Bears went to camp a week early. So as long as he is there by July 26th, 27th, 28th, which is this coming weekend after we record, he's basically missed nothing in terms of a normal exhibition season. Were this to drag into next week, then for the first time you might become concerned, because you start to wonder, Bob, is there something else going on in this kid's head? But right now, I just continue to think it's been much ado about nothing.
Yeah, Hub, you know, it's not urgent right now, but I think it's kind of short-sighted on the Bears' part to begin with. They've known for months that they were going to camp early and that they had time to get this done, and they haven't gotten it done. And I'm not blaming the Bears. Maybe it's the agents as well. But the rookie salary structure was supposed to eliminate all this. But it's amazing to me that regardless, even though everybody's spotted, they will still find things to argue about and nitpick about and hold guys out. And I think it does a disservice to the player, because Roquan Smith is a guy, yeah, he should be starting early in his rookie season, if not on opening day. But the more time he's away, the less chance there is of that. And he's supposed to be an impact player, but he's not going to be an impact player if he misses a great deal of camp. Nick Kwiatkowski is not going to give that job away. Roquan Smith is going to have to earn it. Matt Nagy has said as much. So it's not urgent right now, but to me, in the very near future, by early next week, it is starting to become an issue, and it's starting to impact on how much of an effect this guy will have on a defense in the early part of the season.
Bob, I don't disagree with anything you just said, but again, the reason I made the point that 6 of these 7 first-round holdouts were all with CAA does suggest to me that this is a lot more about the agents than it is the Bears. Now, at the end of the day, it takes both sides to get it done. Not saying the Bears are completely blameless or innocent in this whole thing, but it just seems kind of logical and likely to me. And Eric, it's not about the salary. It's about this offset language on the 4th year of the contract. It just seems likely to me that this one's more on the agents and the advice that Smith is getting.
You're right. If the Bears, you know, had reported a similar timetable to other teams, you know, the angst wouldn't be as high. So, like, as you point out, and you're right, the offset language, basically, which means if the Bears were to move on from him in that 4th year, the offset language would allow him to double dip, and the Bears wouldn't, you know, be off the hook for paying that salary, another team picking him up off waivers. So that's sort of the basic understanding of that. So we're really talking about something that doesn't financially affect the Bears today, tomorrow, or the next day, but rather down the line. You know, Joey Bosa would be the one example of a player recent years who's, you know, extended his holdout very deep and had it kind of affect, you know, his team's performance. That's probably the one example that lately that I can think of, unless there's somebody else that I'm forgetting.
Well, and the interesting concern about all this, just to put a wrap on this, I know this is probably stuff that's not football and people may not be as excited about it, but Baker Mayfield, the number one overall pick, got his deal done at the beginning of the week, and he is the only one of those 7 who's not with CAA. He's with Jack Mills, who is one of the more respected longtime agents ever in the National Football League, one of the few of the originals still hanging on. And yet, a lot of people criticized his agents, Mills and his son, I believe it's Kevin, because they did give in on the offset language. And so the point would be the Browns are getting credit for not wavering on this, because there's always a worry that once you do it with one player, you can't, you have to do it with all players. And so that's where these teams tend to dig in their heels. Again, I'm not taking sides on this one. I think it's all kind of silly and it'll get taken care of. But that's the reason that it's important to some of these teams to not give in on this, because once they do, they may have to do it next year or the year after with a player who might get cut in year three or year four.
Bob, with Roquan Smith yet to be at camp, you had mentioned Nick Kwiatkowski, and it's safe to say that he's getting some pretty valuable reps at that linebacker position. Would you say that he's so far having a fairly good camp?
It's early, and I don't know if you can put a if you can judge it very much this year. But the interesting thing is that Danny Trevathan has yet to practice as well. He's got a hamstring injury. He's your going in, he was your set in stone, one of your starters at inside linebacker. But he's had a lengthy injury history. How much longer he'll be out, we don't know. Nick Kwiatkowski, you know, John Fox used to say the best ability is availability. Nick Kwiatkowski has gotten 13 starts in the last two seasons because other guys weren't available. He's had an injury himself. He had a neck injury that he played through. I think he missed three or four games, but he's gotten 13 starts because he was available. He spent 2 years in Vic Fangio's system. He knows it probably as well as anybody right now. He's not a guy who, if he's in your opening day lineup, you're worried about having a weakness in your lineup. He's not the talent Roquan Smith is, clearly. He was a fourth-round pick, but he's a guy who knows the defense. And he's a very effective rundown player. He's not Roquan Smith in coverage. Very few people are. But he's a guy you can win with.
Hub, you had mentioned the secondaries looking really good so far out in camp. Is this perhaps the next Legion of Boom with the Chicago Bears?
Oh, I don't think I'd go that far. I do like this group. I think Bob mentioned earlier that Kyle Fuller had a couple rough moments with Anthony Miller, but for the most part has looked very good. He's a different young man this year in camp. You can see he's happier. He's smiling more. He's talking more. He's even been better with the media. Prince Amukamara is what, his ninth year, his eighth year? I mean, this is a veteran who's been through the wars, and now he's got the three-year contract. He had a huge day on Tuesday, and he has looked really good. Eddie Jackson is a player that I personally am very excited about. He has been all that visible, but you know, sometimes that's good when you're in the secondary. The question is Adrian Amos, and there, you get varying reports on what he did last year. He was better than he had been in his first couple years. He wasn't special. I don't know if he's the answer. What I have noticed on Monday and Tuesday of this second week of camp is that both Deion Bush and DeAndre Hall, fourth round picks from a couple years ago, were flashing out there, and they're going to push him a little bit. So you feel pretty good with Craven LeBlanc and Bryce Callahan at the nickel. I think if there is an entire unit, Bob, I don't know if you'd agree with this or not, but if there's an entire unit on this club that is pretty well set right now, it is the secondary. And to me, the question is, I'm confident in the corners. I'm confident in Jackson. What is Amos going to do? And do they have the depth to push him if, in fact, he doesn't take another step forward?
Yeah, I think they're in as good a shape at corner as they've been in a long time. You mentioned Prince Amukamara had an interception in training camp, and whether it's in practice or whatever, you don't see that very often. He's got 7 and 7 years, which is not to say that he's not a good cover corner. He can cover as well as a lot of guys, a lot of starting cornerbacks in the league. He just, to this point, has had a problem coming up with interceptions. He's taken some extra reps on the jugs gun to work on his hands. And probably will have more drops in the future, but he is definitely a winning football player as long as he's healthy. I think he's only had one 16-game season where he was healthy for the whole year. But with he and Kyle Fuller, they're in great shape at cornerback, and I love their depth with Craven LeBlanc and Bryce Callahan. And Kyle Fuller, as I mentioned, Anthony Miller beat him once, but other than that, he has looked excellent in this camp. I think looked just as good as he was last year, and last year was clearly his best year, and it was a borderline Pro Bowl year for him. If he takes a step up from there, he's definitely in the talk for Pro Bowl this year.
And I'm Cobb. I'm glad you mentioned Deion Bush. I was kind of quietly told there was a chance. I know he got an opportunity a couple years ago to start some games, but I was told to keep an eye on him by somebody who would know, and that as much of a darling Adrian Amos might be in some Bears fans' minds or the analytics folks, my good friends at Pro Football Focus, things like that, there are still people who believe Deion Bush could possibly push him for a starting spot or earn a role in like a three safety look. So he's a name that I'm certainly keeping an eye on, and a player that I want to see more of.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, Eric, because if they're your good friends, I have nothing negative to say about them, and I'm sure they're good people. But every time I see somebody in the media quoting Pro Football Focus, it just makes me crazy because they come up with these ratings and these stats that quite frankly are ridiculous. You know, and at the end of the year last year, they called Adrian Amos the second best safety in the NFL. Adrian Amos wasn't the 22nd best safety in the NFL. He wasn't very good, you know, and he played better the second half of the season than he did the first half. The Pro Football Focus guys work hard, and they are good people. They've just got a system and a way of grading things that does not match up with the way NFL coaches and scouts grade players and grade games, and you end up with a fair amount of misinformation out there. Deion Bush was a fourth-round pick out of Miami, who I believe was all ACC at the position. Adrian Amos rotated back and forth from cornerback to safety at Penn State and was a fifth-round pick, better known for his coverage. And so in terms of at least credentials and ability, you know, Bush should be every bit the player that Adrian Amos is. Now, and again, I want to be fair here. Amos did have a much better second half of the season last year after he was challenged. So this is why, even though I'm not certain that they're set at that fourth spot, at that second safety spot, they got options and they've got young players that you can get excited about, and that's something we haven't seen at the safety position for some time.
Guys, as we wrap things up, I just want to go around the room, so to speak, and get just any other camp surprises that you guys may have seen over the past couple days. Anything that really stood out that surprised you from these guys? And Bob, let's start with you. Was there anything that just surprised you while you were out there?
It didn't surprise me because I knew Nagy came in with a reputation for being a creative guy, but we've all seen trips formations where there's three wide receivers bunched to one side. What we've seen on multiple occasions are the Bears running trips tight ends bunched on one side of the field. And the reason I noticed it the first time is because they threw back the other way, and Jordan Howard made an excellent catch on a ball thrown behind him. So, and that's something Nagy said early on, that if Jordan Howard has been deficient as a pass catcher, we're not going to just say he can't do that. We're going to work with him to get better at that. And he has looked better in camp. He has worked on it. So I think that he wasn't just paying lip service. I think they want Jordan Howard to be a complete back, and that only helps the offense because they can't pigeonhole the play calling when Jordan Howard's in the game. They won't know that it's definitely a running play. They could throw the ball to him. So I'm interested to see, as we go on, the different formations and the different ways Nagy's going to use all these skill position guys. That's what intrigues me the most.
Eric, how about you? What surprises did you see while you were down in Bourbonnais?
My biggest surprise is Bob revealing all this prized information he's not supposed to be revealing according to the media guidelines. Bob,
just reminding. Boy.
I'm kidding. I was there one day, and here's what I saw. Mitch Trubisky had a pretty below average day to me. He was holding on to the ball too long. His accuracy was scattershot, at times good, not so good other times. You know, he's going to have down days, so I'm not going to put too much stock in that. For me, the interesting thing was how many reps with the ones Kevin White got. You know, that just opened my eyes. And again, it was some good, some bad. He's still got talent, you know, and he's still got a chance to learn and earn a role. I'm glad you mentioned Howard, too. I mean, I still believe in his ability to be a more complete football player, and I'm glad that this coaching staff isn't, you know, throwing out the bathwater with the baby here. You know, they're trying to make him a more full, complete player. Bob, you wrote this week about him picking up a blitz and kind of getting the, you know, the linebackers all upset for the push-ups they had to do. That's great to see. So I'm very encouraged by his development in year three.
Three things for me, really, guys. One, I want to echo what Eric just said. You know, Kevin White, I've been there for almost all the practices, and I would say certainly more good than bad. I mean, he's still got his issues, but we cannot forget this was the seventh player selected overall in the draft. And clearly, Matt Nagy is going to exhaust all possibilities in the hopes that maybe he's got two number one receivers. Now, White has shown nothing to suggest that he's that, but again, more good than bad, and he continues to be a real fascination to me. Number two, I've been very surprised that there's been a lot more focus on Adam Shaheen than there has been on Trey Burton. We talked a little bit about this. It's almost like they're keeping Burton under wraps, even in training camp, and doing everything they can to use Shaheen in the passing game. You can't tell much about blocking or pass rush. I don't care if they have pads on or not. They're not going full speed. And that leads me to number three. One guy we haven't talked about who is amongst the MASH unit, who they're being so careful with, is Leonard Floyd, who I believe has practiced every day. And watching him out there, you can't see pass rush in these drills. You're just not going to know. But the fact that, again, with that great quote, the best ability is availability, he's been available pretty much every day. He's out there. He's getting down the scheme. And I think what people need to realize about Leonard Floyd, he can't just be a double-digit sack guy to be considered a success this year, along with Akeem Hicks. He's got to be the focal point of this defense. Now, I'm not seeing a lot of, vocal leadership out there. I'm not hearing a lot of talking. But just the fact, and Bob, correct me if I'm wrong, but just the fact that he's out there pretty much all the time is something that I do feel a little better about.
Yeah, it's been great to see Leonard Floyd out there every day, every practice. And as Vic Fangio has said many times in the past, what this kid needs to do is stack practices. In the past, he started to flash, made some plays, and then gotten hurt and taken a couple steps back. What he needs to do is continue to progress with no setbacks. And I think if he does that, he's worked on it. He's worked on becoming more flexible, more durable, trying to avoid the soft tissue injuries that he's had in the past. And I think if he's healthy for 16 games, there's no doubt in my mind he's a double-digit sack guy.
Well, great stuff from all of you guys this week. That will do it for this edition of the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. We'll continue to bring the latest camp updates next week with the Pro Football Weekly crew. Plus, we'll have Bears and Ravens preview next week for those two as those two teams square off in the Hall of Fame game, which I know a lot of us are very excited that football is back and in fact back on TV. So be sure to be checking out the latest Bears news as it breaks 24/7 at ProFootballWeekly.com. We also have an event reminder. I know that we mentioned it last week and we'll continue to mention it as we lead up to this event. But join Pro Football Weekly Saturday, September 8th at the Rouse Center for the Arts in Crystal Lake, Illinois for Football Legends Live presented by Rum Chata and the Syntegra Health System. This two-hour program will include several Pro Football Hall of Famers, including Brian Urlacher, Mean Joe Green, Lawrence Taylor, Anthony Munoz, Randy White, and Dan Hampton, along with MCs Pat Boyle and Dave Kaplan, and Pro Football Weekly's very own Hub Arkish and our entire Pro Football Weekly crew, as well as other surprise guests as we celebrate Pro Football Weekly's honorary team for the ages and the greatest Bears team of the modern era. Tickets are on sale now at ProFootballWeekly.com, so be sure and get yours today. We want to thank you all for listening this week, and we hope that you head on over to iTunes and subscribe to this podcast if you've not already done so. A big thanks to Humphreys McGee for the use of our theme song, Glory, which you can find on iTunes if you enjoy listening to that track each week. Once again, I'm Dan Mott for Hub Arkish, Bob Laguerre, and Eric Edholm. We thank you, and we will talk to you next week. Take care, everyone.